All right, so we're going to talk about some SharePoint 2010 development for the next 75 minutes. I've leveled this at about 200, got some code. You know, when we're kind of introducing the platform, you know, I've got some slides as well, so I want to walk through some of that. So I want to give you kind of split between demos and slides, okay, just to set expectations. I am doing a session after lunch where we'll probably just walk through the tools and just kind of show lots of stuff. So if you're a developer and you want to get into the tools, you can come to that session. This will be more of an introduction to the platform. That said, my name is Steve Fox. I work for Microsoft. There's my email alias. If you want to follow up with any questions afterwards, please feel free. There's my blog. Before I get started, just wanted to kind of throw something out there, an anecdote of my life in the last 24 hours. I do a lot of traveling, right? So I was about 30, 34 hours without sleep the other day when I came into the hotel, and I saw that. Okay, I know you all know what this is. You're from Europe. You kind of recognize this. I sat down on my bed, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, what the heck is this thing, right? And should I warm some towels on this? So I did. I proved it out. It's a towel warmer. It works. I couldn't find any iron or ironing board, so I figured maybe it's a vertical ironing board. So I tried to put some pants in there. It didn't work with my sweater. And, of course, you can appreciate this kind of dumb foreigners coming in and seeing this stuff. Then if you stand back, it kind of looks like a fire exit for children. I was 34 hours without sleep, okay? So I was kind of hallucinating at this point. But there is kind of a moral to the story is that sometimes when you look at SharePoint, it kind of looks at this interesting object, and you can look at it from different perspectives, right? It could be a towel warmer. It could be a vertical ironing board. It could be a fire exit for children, depending on whether you're an IT pro, you're a dev, or an end user. So that said, how many devs are in the room here? Okay, good. Most of you are devs. That's good because we're going to be talking about mainly three things here. I'm going to give you a short overview. We'll talk about developer productivity. So what is going to make you really excited as a SharePoint developer that kind of made you frustrated in 2007? We're going to talk a bit about the services, so in the new stuff, the goop. And then we're going to talk about deployment near the end. And hopefully we'll have a bit of time for Q&A. So that said, let's talk a bit about an overview. So when I think about SharePoint development, I've got a couple of slides here. When I think about SharePoint development, I really don't think about it as just like this managed code environment. It can't be. Because it's a web-based platform, right? Which means you have to have some degree of HTML, CSS, JavaScript, other types of, you know, web languages, maybe PHP, those sorts of things. So when I think about shades of SharePoint development here, I think about it kind of along this spectrum, okay? On the one side of the screen here, you can see there's some stuff that's out of the box. There's web parts, you know, maybe some themes and things like that, right? And power users may think of themselves as developers. And kind of as we move across, you can see that, well, maybe I want to build a customized page, so I grab some HTML and throw it in a content editor, and then I become, you know, a developer. I'm empowered as a SharePoint developer. So I call that collaboration. And as we move across, you can see that we've got these custom solutions. Kind of this is where things get a little cool, right? Because then we're talking about VB.NET and C Sharp and kind of ASP.NET controls and really sort of interesting things. But the point is, this is where you're working in Visual Studio, you're kind of probably in a team management system through a team foundation server or something like that. But the thing is, you're probably leveraging much more than just HTML and CSS. And then finally, on the right-hand side, we've got the branded internet experience, which probably has a lot of things going on. But the key takeaway from this slide is the fact that you've got this range. I know people who actually live and work in SharePoint Designer. They very, very rarely touch Visual Studio. I know the opposite side of the spectrum where I work with guys who are all about Visual Studio. They never touch SharePoint Designer. And many will claim that happily. They never used SharePoint Designer 2007, right? So the thing is, we've got different levels and skills. But when I think about SharePoint development, I think about it encompassing quite a bit. And so I just wanted to set those expectations up front because at the top end here, we've got all these different languages. It's a platform. It's interoperable, right? You have to use these languages. You've got the different types of solutions that you can build. And at the bottom here, we've got these different experiences, the different form factors, right? You can see that we've got the PC, we've got phone, we've got the browser. And obviously, each one of those is going to have a slightly different, in some cases, more than slightly different development experience. And then in other cases, it may not have the richest development experience yet. still some development going on in the mobile space, but there is a form factor experience there. And then as we look across on-premises and cloud, you'll see in 2010 a more symmetrical relationship between what you can build and develop and deploy from your for your on-premises instance of SharePoint to that of SharePoint 2010 online. We'll talk about something called sandbox solution. That kind of opens the doors a little bit, because basically what that means is I can build and deploy these kind of encapsulated web parts or applications and put them into SharePoint Online, and they'll run without the need of the farm-level administrator, you know, hassle you had to go through when we were kind of developing and deploying for 2007. So that was a real quick overview. You know, basically the key takeaway, SharePoint development is broad. SharePoint in and of itself is a platform. And so when we look at the developer kind of vis-a-vis SharePoint, we think about three core pillars. Again, the first one, developer productivity. I'll talk a bit about the tools. And I think there's some great story there with tools. Really, really good story. Then I'll talk a bit about services, and we'll talk a bit about deployment. Okay? Now, when you hear marketing people talk about SharePoint, they'll tell you it's the business collaboration platform for the enterprise and the web. Okay, that's what you'll hear. And I think that's interesting, but I think that the whole point of this particular session is to kind of drill into that a little bit and make sense of that from a developer's perspective, okay? So with that, let's do a quick developer demo of SharePoint. How many people have seen SharePoint 2010? Oh, God. I'm just kidding. So there's probably five of you who haven't. No, this is the new SharePoint interface. And you know what? I think what I'll do is I'll talk about the entry points for developers as opposed to giving you a walkthrough of the actual interface, because I think there's some interesting things here for developers. So most of you, if you've seen it, you've seen the fact that you've got the ribbon experience. The one thing I like is the fact that now, just when we have that kind of power user inline developer experience, you click site actions and you get this context ribbon. It's a really nice experience. For those of you who are looking to customize the ribbon, you can. It's possible. You combine XML, the RibbonX schema, and JavaScript, and you can drop that in, and you have your own controls and issuing your own JavaScript on the actual page. I love this experience of just being able to kind of edit the content here. We'll go ahead and, let's say, insert. And we'll go ahead and insert a picture. Browse. Super exciting. Go down to my pictures. I could put my hockey fights picture in there. You like that? I'm going to be a PC, and I'll put in an old team site. Because I think I like this picture because it gives you the contrast. For those of you who haven't seen SharePoint 2010, it's nice to see them side by side, to see the quick editability of actually adding things into SharePoint. And there you go. There's this nice team site that we can see. So when we think about SharePoint 2010 to 2007, it looks pretty different, doesn't it, with this ribbon experience. And the ribbon experience lies at the core of this. So you know that depending on what you're doing, different functionality will actually be exposed through the ribbon. Okay? So we can save that, since that's super exciting. I can see you're all really enthused about that. One thing I like here is the edit site in SharePoint Designer. So I think, you know, again, I said before, I was kind of joking about listening to developers in the context of SharePoint Designer 2007 and them saying, you know, I really don't want to use SharePoint Designer 2007 because I'm a pro dev. Actually, you'll want to have this in your toolkit for 2010. Okay, there's a lot of really interesting things you can actually do with SharePoint Designer. So if we spin open SharePoint Designer here, you can see that, let's just take a quick view here. You can see that you've got this navigation system, which is a lot different from SharePoint 2007. Now, 2010 is based around these different navigation systems and tied to the website. So I can basically open up from SharePoint, and it'll directly kind of keep that link with the SharePoint site. I can look at lists and libraries, workflows. Workflows are interesting in that you can create a workflow in SharePoint Designer and actually import it into Visual Studio, add some workflow code to it, and then redeploy it. So it's got a nice hand-in-glove relationship, a better hand-in-glove relationship than it did before. Okay? Site pages, site assets, all sorts of interesting things that you can do. And I think my next demo, I'm actually going to show you a couple things. Yeah, in my next demo I will. But if most of you have seen SharePoint then, 2010, I won't go too deep here. But basically what we'll do a couple of demos in the next demo where I'll show you SharePoint Designer, XML, XSLT, and I'll show you some of the Visual Studio stuff. So we'll jump back then in just a sec. Yes? The amplification is a bit loud. Is that better? The amplification is a bit loud. Can you turn down the speakers? Is that better? I'll talk quieter. All right, developer productivity. I kind of have a loud voice. I'm sorry. You know, I used to coach hockey, so I used to scream at kids. So it's just kind of in my DNA, I guess. All right, let's talk about developer productivity. So let's talk about your environment. So as a developer, the first thing you need to do is, I've got to set up my machine. How do I do it? Okay? There's a couple of different ways you can do it. The first way is you can build out your machine on the metal. Now, what I mean by on the metal is I have my laptop, I have my, you know, my whatever, my PC or my server, and I'm putting all of the hardware or all the software, rather, on that particular machine. Okay? Now, if you're doing that, you're going to have a 64-bit operating system. Okay? You're going to need either Windows 7, Windows Vista Service Pack 1, Windows Server 2008, or 2008 R2. Okay? Personally, I have Windows Server 2008 R2 on my laptops, and that's the kind of thing I roll with. I like to have everything in one kind of package environment because ultimately you have to build for servers, so I like to build in my production environment, or at least an environment I can directly test in. You'll see that if you think about Visual Studio, you actually have to have a local instance of SharePoint installed in your Visual Studio box in order to directly test those applications you're building and deploying for SharePoint. Okay? So remember that. Windows 7 not supported in a production environment, but you can use it if you want to. The other option is virtualized. So I can, you know, have my Hyper-V role enabled on Windows Server 2008 R2, and I often do that. I have another Hyper-V that I usually spin up when I have, you know, something I want to run around on the road with. And you can do equally both of those, whatever you want. I think the interesting thing about Visual Studio 2010 is that you can have that source code control. So if you are working as a team, you know, irrespective of whether you're working in a virtualized environment or whether you're on a server, you can actually push into a common team foundation server and have a build script run out into your staging or production environment. So, in short, you've got your options in terms of building out your development environment. Now, once you've built out your development environment, what are the tools that you're going to use? Remember I talked about that spectrum, right? On the one side, we have kind of the web-based experience. Now, I say tools. You know, again, we're referring to the power user here, but more so when we think about pro devs, the guys who do this every single day and they kind of earn their living that way, it's going to be SharePoint Designer and mainly Visual Studio. Okay, those are the two tools that you'll probably play with. Now, the thing is, I've also put Expression here. And I'll talk a bit about Sovalite and SharePoint a little later on. But I think it's a very important integration to think about if you're trying to build advanced UI for your SharePoint experience, you're probably going to want to use Expression Blend to do it. Okay, that doesn't mean you have to go out and become designers, but you probably want to play around with Expression to get the feel for how you might design advanced UI. And you can download a trial edition 30 days, so if you don't like it, you can discard it. But, you know, probably more than likely you will live in both Visual Studio 2010 and SharePoint Designer 2010. Okay? This is the SharePoint Designer 2010. Again, I just showed you this, but we'll walk into a little more detail. You can do a lot of different things here. You can. How many people are familiar with the Business Data Catalog from 2007? Yeah, so there's this thing called the BCS services, which is kind of an evolved BDC. You can build the application definition file, what's the evolved ADF, using SharePoint Designer. You can obviously create lists and create workflow. You can create WSPs that actually you can import into Visual Studio then, depending on what you're doing in SharePoint Designer. So you have a fairly nice integrated experience. Visual Studio 2010, this is huge. Huge, right? You'll hear me preach this in my next session, but it was so difficult to go out and talk to the SharePoint developer community with a straight face and, like, you know, saying, look, we have this great developer experience for you. Because really what we have, VSC WSS, you know, WSP Builder, we had these, you know, community tools. Really, we were kind of leaving you in the lurch in terms of having a streamlined opportunity to develop and deploy code for SharePoint. So you'll see in Visual Studio 2010 some major advancements, which is huge. F5, right? Woo, F5. Maybe I'm the only one excited about that. Come on. All right, so let's develop a couple apps here. So the first one I want to do is just show you some of the capabilities of SharePoint Designer. Again, I think this is a somewhat interesting you know, UI to work in. So first I wanted to show you is the site pages. And if I go to Rockspace, this is just a page that I've built. It's basically a page that I can deploy as a page into my site. And essentially what I've done is I've added some JavaScript And I've added two objects, ASP.NET controls. I've added some JavaScript that every time I change something on a list box is going to pop up and say, give me some information, right? And I've also added an XML ASP.NET control. So let's just buzz this up so you can see this a little bit here. So the first one here, you can see that here's a list box. When I click that, something's going to happen. I'll show you the code in just a sec. The other thing here is this XML control. I love this XML control because basically what I can do is I can feed in a document source here, which is just my XML. It's just a bunch of employee records, you know, ID and name. And then I've got this transform source that actually takes that and transforms it and presents it, right? And I think what you'll find is much richer XSLT transformation across SharePoint 2010, which is nice, right? Very easily you can take some data and transform it the way you want to, okay? Now, if you go ahead and look at the code, there's all the world. They want, where's the code? So here's the code, very simple code, so please don't be offended. This is basically just, you know, I'm calling a function, you know, and based on what you select, it's going to pop back some information. But the key takeaway here is I've got some JavaScript, and I've built that in SharePoint Designer. Now, you probably won't get the IntelliSense that you might get in other tools, but the fact is it's possible to write this in here, okay? Now, this is not a best practice. This is not me saying you should insert JavaScript into your page because you might want to add it as a resource somewhere in your site assets, right? And that's typically how I probably recommend you all doing it. But I'm just showing you for the purposes of illustration here that I can actually throw some JavaScript in there and party on. So we can preview in the browser based on what I add. And you can see here that here's my two ASP.NET controls. Okay, the first one. Pretty impressive, huh? An alert. Well, anyways, so it just shows that, hey, you've got an event that can actually, you know, happen on the page. I can build and deploy it with SharePoint Designer. Okay? It is possible. And this, again, is the employee information. You know, I'm not going to open up the XML file. I'm sure you've all seen an XML file with multiple records in. And the XSLT just kind of transforms using a cascading style sheet. Very simple one. But again, with a simple XML ASP.NET control, and some JavaScript, I've created a page that does something, okay? I've did this in like, you know, 20 minutes, so give you guys like 2 days, you're gonna be like creating some kick butt stuff. So that's kind of one thing I wanted to show you. Let's take a look at another thing. Other thing is, so master pages. You can also show master pages in here well. What I did with this particular master page, there actually is a minimal master page out there. And for those of you who are actually actively creating master pages, you know that you have to have all these placeholders on the page. For those of you who don't, do a little research before you go ahead and start, you know, playing around with master pages, because they can kind of make you want to pull your hair out a little bit if you're not familiar with the structure and all these different things, right? But again, I can create a master page that actually has some interesting stuff going on, and that's essentially what I did. I just did the minimal master page, created it with SharePoint, deployed it, and here what I've got is my minimal master page, and along the top, I just have a PNG, to give it a little bit of branding, nice and cool. But the nice thing is on the left-hand side, I've taken a Silverlight application. It's static, right? It's just a static application. I've taken a Silverlight application, and I've actually embedded it into my master page. So anytime I use that master page, I could actually have this kind of fly up in the context of that master page, right? And you can imagine that if you had dynamic loading, videos, and things like that with metrics that you wanted to capture behind the scenes, you can actually do that with Silverlight. So this is one of my kind of on the soapbox moments about Silverlight and SharePoint, embedding them in master pages to have some you know, increased visual effects. Okay? Now, let's go ahead and create something simple with Visual Studio. This is going to be dirt simple. I just want to show you the templates first. Again, we're going to do a drill down this afternoon. So SharePoint templates, standard now in Visual Studio 2010. Okay, so you can see here in my new project under SharePoint 2010, I have a number of different templates available to me. That in and of itself is just a cool demo. Because it's exciting. Again, am I the only one excited about this? But the problem is, before, again, we had to do these things in various capacities, right? Now we can go ahead, create an empty SharePoint project. Go on my first proj. We'll keep it in Tools D6. Say, okay, that's going to create a shell for me, just a shell project, okay? We're going to walk through a wizard. The wizard will say, hey, do you want to put this as a sandbox solution, which means I could effectively take this and run it in the cloud or run it in this nice sandbox kind of ring-fenced environment, or you could deploy it as a farm solution. Now, this is the typical farm solution, right? You deploy it, you're going to need some sort of administrator privileges to get it into, you know, to the site. So you could think of sandbox solutions running in the context of a site collection. Farm level, you know, that's a different story, higher level. So click finish. That's going to create the project for me, okay? And what happens is the whole project structure is created. Let me just move this over and get rid of this. And I'll add, let's add a simple web part. Add a new item. And this exposes the item level templates, right? So they got project level templates and item level templates, okay? And these these super ugly icons here, my friend Wouter has built some extensibilities. He has no experience in designing icons, as you can see. I think he was drinking, probably 32 beers. That's what the 32 means. But he's going to talk about extensibility this afternoon. So, but it just is indicative of the fact that we have templates in there, and you as a developer could add your own if you wanted to. There's a really good extensibility environment built into Visual Studio. So let's go ahead. You know, my first web part. Okay. Click enter. Now what will happen is it will add some more stuff to the actual menu here. Let's do a little control 1, go in, and so you can see what's going on. So you can see here I have my empty shell project automatically added the Microsoft SharePoint DLL that I need to do my SharePoint stuff. I've got this thing called a feature. You all know what a feature is, right? Who does not know what a feature is? Awesome. So this is basically the automatic creation of a feature for you in Visual Studio. There's this thing called a package, which basically packages everything up. And I have my first web part. It's got three files, elements.xml, firstwebpart.cs, and webpart.webpart. These are all the files, the core class, plus the configuration files that are used by my feature. Now, if you are manually building out your applications in 2007, you know that you'd be building out your feature hierarchy, you'd be building out your class, you'd be building a lot of the stuff by hand, right? How many guys did that? Build it by hand, exactly. You had a post-build event to put everything in, because you guys like control of your code, right? So in this case, you know, Visual Studio does a lot of the stuff for you, okay? Now, we'll get into a little more coding later, so we'll just kind of say, label lame-o. Steve can't spell. And we'll just say new label. Okay? And we'll just go here and we'll say, you guys. Usually people in America, they shout out when stuff like that happens. So feel free. Just say, hey, you got a zero. You should have a bracket, you big goof. Okay? Text equals hello world, okay? And then we will say this dot controls dot add lame-o. Okay, now, I think it's less important what actually code is in here and more important what's going on, right? So if I go ahead and build this, remember when I actually created the project, I actually associated it with a particular site, which is the local site that's running on my Windows Server. And that's what I want to say before, when you're creating your environment and you're creating it against Windows Server, make sure you actually, you know, if you want to do and kind of test these applications, you're actually building on the server with SharePoint on. So you can see here, let's go ahead and view output. And we'll go ahead and do that. So you can see there's a bunch of stuff going on. I'll just give you a little highlight of that. But basically, Visual Studio is going through this process of doing all the stuff you may have done through post-build events before. Okay, it's restarting IIS, it's deploying this, blah-de-blah, it's doing that. It's doing all the things it should do when you build and deploy a web part. As a developer, you expect this, right? So now you have it, okay? It's activating the feature now. Remember I had that feature, so it's taking and activating, it's putting into SharePoint in the appropriate places, it's building out that folder hierarchy where it should in the SharePoint Hive. It's taking a little long to activate the feature. There we go. Build, deploy. Now, here's what I love. I'm going to do this one more time, okay? Build and deploy. Output. How many people had to go manually delete some folders on SharePoint 2007 when retracting? How frustrating was that? Retracting, and now it knows. It knows that the actual assembly exists, the feature exists. It's going to retract it, then put the new one out there. Okay? So it's really, I think there's a lot of smartness built into Visual Studio that wasn't really built in there before. Well, it didn't exist before. So let's go over to, let me go to a site here and go into my favorites. And I'll open up just a test web part page that I built. And a web part page is just a type of web part page that has web parts on it. You can configure the web parts to look in particular columns and rows. I have this laptop. It hates me because I've got all this stuff on it. It's having a coronary right now because I'm trying to load a page. Let's kill this. Free up some space. Any questions while this is going on? I don't mind taking questions. Yep. So the question was, the development machine have to be 64-bit. So I'll put it this way. Visual Studio 2010 can run on 32-bit or 64-bit. However, if you want to code on SharePoint, you should be using 64-bit, okay? Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
I mean, it's... Well, yeah, and it's... Obviously, you want to hear that you could run 32-bit and 64-bit in your development environment. And what you could do is you could run, I guess, some sort of Windows 7. I think you can have Windows 7 32-bit, can't you? Yeah, and then you could put Visual Studio 2010 on that. The thing you can't do is deploy and test on that server. Got it? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I will take that as feedback to the product group and say... Europe has spoken. All right, add a web part. Insert. Custom. You can see all I've got lots of little custom things. And I can't remember what I called this thing. My first web part. Thank you very much. My memory proxy. Okay, and so basically there, it's going to add in, there we go, hello world. Now, I will build a little more sophisticated application, so don't worry. This session is not about changing the text on a label. You guys will beat me up if I do that. But that kind of gives you an idea. There's lots of stuff built into Visual Studio 2010. I'm really excited about it, to be honest with you. Lots of good stuff. The other thing is the developer dashboard. Actually, I'll jump back and show you this. The developer dashboard is actually, you know, most of you probably use Fiddler, right? Fiddler is, if you're not using Fiddler, Fiddler is just kind of an application that gives you more detailed breakdown of when you're actually deploying out into websites. It gives you some feedback as to what's going on. If you click on the developer dashboard, you can, you know, let's retry. It basically turns on this detailed information about your particular page. So let's say you have four or five web parts that you've kind of loaded into that one page. It'll actually give you some load time, some details about what calls are going out to particular databases, things like that. It's probably not as detailed as Fiddler, but what it can do, it can give you some upfront metrics on web parts you're deploying into a web part page if you're trying to satisfy a certain performance. Okay? So, and this is the command, stsadmin, et cetera, et cetera. You can just open up STS, just a command prompt, and run it from within... the Hive. So that said, that's kind of developer productivity. Before I go on to platform services, any quick questions? Above and beyond 32-bit environment? I'm so sorry. Any questions? Okay. Yes, sir?
What was the thing at the beginning you showed us and said, what is this? Is it a paint warmer? Is it an iron?
Do you really want me to go back there? Oh, you don't know what it was? Oh, I just assumed you guys knew what that was. It's you put pants in, and you close the thing, and it irons your pants. But trust me, it doesn't work with sweaters. I'm ashamed to admit I actually tried it. God, I was really jet-lagged. All right, so platform services. Does that answer your question? All right. Yeah, sorry about that. Left you all kind of in suspense. Were you all wondering what that was all this time? Come on, go back. Platform services, what's new? Lots of stuff that's new. I'm actually really excited about some of these services, right? And what I did was I kind of partitioned this out into four areas. The first one, Lob integration. So how do I integrate SharePoint with Siebel, with SAP, PeopleSoft? There's a growing trend of this going on. And what sort of functionality is built into SharePoint 2010 allow me to do that? Data access and programmability. So how can I program against lists much easier? Okay, because we all want to do that, right? Services and OM, and then UI extensibility. So when we think about, first of all, lob integration, BCS, Business Connectivity Services, is one of the big things you're going to hear about if you haven't already. Basically, as I told you before, BDC 2007, that web part, remember it had that XML file that mediated the relationship between the SharePoint web part and that back-end system. It was ADO.NET and what else was it? It was web services compliant, so you could actually attach both. And it was read-only, though. What BCS allows you to do is actually create a read-write relationship, in fact, a CRUD relationship, with back-end systems. Okay? Very, very cool. Because now you have this thing that actually looks. In fact, I'll show you one. Let's go here. Customer. This is actually external data. I've got a web service calling external data, pulling it back into SharePoint, and yet I have the same capabilities built in to SharePoint, so I can view and delete and add a new item, and you know, just kind of have this exact same capabilities that I would have for a regular list, but this is external data. So imagine this is SAP data. I now have SAP data in control, in CRUD control, from within my list. This is called an external list. No, it's basically writing directly into SAP. In that case, that's a web services writing. It's a web service wrapper into a database. I'm doing a session tomorrow on that, a drill down. So if you want to learn more, that's fine. But you can, again, it can be ADO.NET. So it could be a wrapper into a SQL server, or it could be a web service that talks to an external data source. But that read-write is directly into that data source. So I'll move on to data access for the sake of time here. There's something called SharePoint Link. So what that means is basically I can treat lists like true entities and model them, and then actually, you know, call them and query them and program against them. They have this thing called the client object model. I'm going to show you a demo of that in a bit. The client object model is kind of interesting because basically what it allows you to do, it allows you to have a much more concise programming, you know, syntax, and then actually work against lists, okay? And you still have a little bit of CAML there if you want to do some sophisticated queries, but you could get away with not using CAML in certain situations. ADO.NET services, so I can add this thing called an ADO.NET data services list connection, and then I can have programmatic access through data modeling. So again, lots of ways to model your data. There are different techniques with the SharePoint link than with ADO.NET because it works with the REST web service, which takes us into services here. The thing I really like, if you looked at 2007 and you were building services, if you consumed the ASP.NET services that were out of the box, it was great, you had no problems. You could build an ASP.NET service and drop it into the Hive, but you know you had to go through a bunch of steps to make it kind of SharePoint compliant or, you know, with the different things they needed to expose that service. But the good thing is you had the context of SharePoint in order to do that, so it was great. However, WCF, you're kind of out to lunch, right? You couldn't do that. You couldn't take a WCF service and easily drop it into the SharePoint Hive in 2007. You had this thing called a virtual path provider, right? How many of you have written a virtual path provider? A few of you, so you know. That goes away with SharePoint 2010. Native support for WCF, okay, which means I can write WCF services and I can plop them in to the Hive and they will work in context without a virtual path provider. So that's nice. And of course, you have REST support as well. Limited REST support, but you have REST support. And it works in combination with the ADO.NET data services. Evolved events, improved workflow, so good stuff there. In terms of UI, I think to cherry pick two things from this particular category. Extensibility, I talked about the ribbon, so you can extend the ribbon to customize it if you want. Again, it's Ribbon X and JavaScript that you would kind of meld together. Silverlight, I have a Silverlight example I'll show you in a bit. But Silverlight, it kind of works out of the box. You can customize it. You can integrate it fairly deeply with SharePoint. So it's nice on multiple levels. And, of course, OpenXML, if you want to integrate with Office and XSLT, as I showed you, you can transform lots of stuff. Now, line of business integration. Let's just talk a bit about that, if we drill into this. Basically, what we've got here is different ways to expose line of business data inside of SharePoint. So, for example, on the one hand, I could take a Silverlight control. I could effectively consume an external list that's coming from SAP, and I can create a reporting mechanism. Nice and easy, and it looks very, very slick. Okay? Or I could have a visual web part and do something similar. Or I could just have my standard external list that I was just showing you, and you'd still have that capability of reading and writing. Office as well, you have some inroads there into integrating with your line of business system, whether it be through list service or custom service or whatnot. Different ways to interact with that line of business system. But the point is, you've got service layers that support fairly broadly the ability to actually integrate with that back-end data. Okay? BCS, I'm obviously not going to drill into all these boxes and arrows and stuff like that because you'll kill me. So basically, just at a high level, there is a server-side list, that external list that I showed you. I can actually take that offline. It will install a client-side cache that represents the data that I'm interacting with. And what that means is I'm interacting with SAP. It will take a client-side snapshot of that. And there's an API in the client that allows me to program against that. And there's this listener service. You see this BCS sync there? It's a listener service that kind of listens for any changes while you're offline. And then when you go back online, it persists those changes back. So now there's an offline story for interacting with that back-end data. So nice. That's what I'm saying when you think about BCS. I think it's going to be fairly popular. Drilling into data access and programmability. So there's options here, as I mentioned. If you look down from the top bottom, we have REST APIs. And some of these are strongly typed. Some of them are weakly typed. So as developers, you have to figure out what suits your purpose, right? Do you want a strongly typed development experience, or do you need something that's weakly typed, or does it matter? The point is, you look at REST APIs, client object models, a couple of options. The client object model is a remote client DLL that you can basically access the server with. So I can use Silverlight, I can use JavaScript, and I can use it in a WinForm app or a WPF app, and still basically get the same functionality that I would have with the Microsoft SharePoint DLL on the server. Okay? So it's very, very cool. And I think a lot of people are actually going to be using the client object model. Okay? Data platform, lots of stuff in there that's improved. External lists, I talked a bit about that. Performance, I think somebody's going to be talking about list performance this week. I hope so, because there's a lot of improvements there. Server OM and then link, I talked a bit about. And this is just an example. I think most of you have used link before. So the syntax looks very, very similar and close. And link's obviously a fairly broad language to kind of use, or a syntax to use. But this is a simple illustration of, creating a query from data.orders where you want the city to equal London. Okay? And so basically what you're doing is you're treating that list data as an object that you can query against. This is the client object model. And again, this is basically allowing multiple clients interacting with that SharePoint data. And I think what I'm going to do is just jump into a demo. Let's go here and open up file. Any questions, just throw them out here while I'm doing this. No questions. Quiet bunch, huh? Okay. Demos. SBDev. This is demo. Demo 6. You're trying to throw me off over there? All right. SBWrite data. Here we go. So basically what I'm going to show you here, this is a WPF app that's going to be consuming some data on the server. I think it's going to write back to the data. Or right back to that SharePoint list, but it's going to be using the client object model. Okay? And let's just get rid of this guy here. So the first things first, I want to show you a couple things here. When you're actually building, I just went through the normal process like file, new project, WPF application. Okay? That's where we're at. Then after that, I added Microsoft.SharePoint.client and Microsoft.SharePoint.client.runtime. These are the two DLLs that you would add to your client-side app that would facilitate this integration or interactivity with the server. Okay? Yes. Silverlight, JavaScript, and .NET. Okay? Now remember, if you're using Silverlight, your syntax is going to look a little different, right? You've got asynchronous calls, so you'll have to manage those calls and behaviors around those calls a little differently than you would within a WinForm or WPF app. Okay? All right, so let's go ahead, and if we look at the main window. Now, I want you to contain yourself because my UI skills are just out of this world. Okay? really. Three fields, a couple of buttons. Crazy. Any questions while this is loading up? You guys excited? Come on. It's Monday. Are you working? Come on. We got beers at like 5 o'clock. All right, here we go. So here's my super duper incredibly designed UI that you're also, you want the code. Where's the code? I need the code. Basically what we're going to do is we're going to obviously feed it a site, URL, and a name, and a SKU, and a price. And if we go back and we actually look at, where am I, right here, look at my products. Basically this is the list that we're going to be working against. This is the products list, general list I built. It's nothing special. It's not like a, you know, like an external list of, or anything like that, but it's just a product list. And we'll come back to it in just a sec because my machine is dying. Okay, so if you go into the code, go ahead, and there's a couple of things going on. My buttons, I have some class-level variables I'm just setting as strings. There's my exit event, of course, some strings, and then I have, let me see here, let's go here and add my snippet. Okay, this is where things get kind of interesting, okay? Now, I don't know how many of you can see this, so I'll try and make it a little bigger. Client OM, basically just, you have to manage the namespace when you're using this new client object model. But basically what I'm doing here is I'm creating a context for my site. Now this would be where you would normally call the list web service, right? And then begin implementing on that web service, okay? So I set the context, create the new context, I'm passing in a string variable, which is basically just whatever I enter in to my field. And then I've got this products list that I'm creating that will equal whatever I'm pulling back using the getByTitle method. So all that's doing is now that I've set up the context, it's using this getByTitle to go and pull that list data back for me, okay? All right? And then I've got this context.load, load the web and load the lists. Then I've got this execute query thing. What is that? So the client object model is all about queuing up commands, okay, to be more performant than batch processing that command with this execute query. Now, when I talked about the syntax being different in Silverlight, what you'll see is in WinForm apps or WPF apps, you'll see execute query. In Silverlight, you'll see execute query async. Okay? But both do the same thing, effectively. They execute a query, and it's going to make the calls that I just basically set up before it into the SharePoint site. And you can see that what I'm doing is passing in some information. I'm creating a new product item. And then again, let's do this so you can see it a bit better. Creating a new item, setting some properties for that item, namely what's the title, what's the product SKU, what's the price, and then I'm calling this update method. Okay, so some of the syntaxes, if you've been used to working with lists before, it's fairly close, you know, in terms of using the update method. And again, I've got this execute query method. So what am I doing? I'm taking all the things I kind of processed and built before, queued up those method calls or property settings, and I'm executing a query to actually push that out to the server. Okay? Is that a hand up I see over there? How do you make it work offline? Can you give me more, a little more on that? Yep. That's a great question. So it's a different API that you would use is the answer to the question. So essentially what we're doing here is you're actually actively, you're interacting with an active list, okay, using this particular API. There's a separate API that BCS provides, and if you want to talk to me offline, I can actually get you some code. I have some on my blog too, I think. But there's a separate API that you use that actually interacts with the entities you pull off of the list onto the client, or that you've pulled onto the client. So it's just basically the short answer is a separate API. Okay? All right, so let's see if the list came up. There's my list. I mean, it's just a fairly simple list. Product name, product SKU, and price. Okay, so we'll go back and we'll F5. Any other questions while this is F5ing? No? Can you use the client object model to get the user profile data? I don't know. I haven't tried it. I don't think so. I'd have to think about it. I don't think you would do that. Can you give me a scenario where you might think you would do that? Oh, I see. So are you building a list out of those that profile information, then accessing? Yeah, certainly if you had the list built first, then you could do it. The user profile API would be something different, right? That there'd be two kind of API calls that you'd be layering on top of one another. First, to get the information from the user profile store, put it in a list. Second, use the client object model to access information. That's the way you would design it, but you'd still be interacting against the list, which is pulling the user profile information over. So we'll just say, in the spirit of our first slide, we will say pant iron. We have to specify that it's vertical, though, because there could be a horizontal pant iron out there. Who knows? And we'll say PTIR. Oh, my God. It's a very expensive item. And we'll add that baby. And that will go off. Now, interestingly, what's going on behind the scenes here is the client object model. So it basically abstracts your service calls away from you. Okay? It kind of says, hey, I've got this information. I'm going to go call the list's web service and implement all this stuff. So you don't necessarily have to worry about, remember all the camel you'd have to build up, those camel constructs, and then pass it in? You don't have to worry about that for the most part with this. So basically, that's what happens here. And it will add a record at some future point in time. You will have to trust me on that. We could do an F5 and see if it worked already, but other than that, we can come back to that. All right, services and OM. I talked a bit about this. Looking pretty good on time so far. ASP.NET, out of the box, legacy. So basically what that means for the most part. Now, I started testing this last night. I've got a beta build of SharePoint on my box here. And so I started testing some of the older lists web service code that I had and tried to port it forward. And there were some slight changes. And so I was thinking that, oh, yeah, ASP.NET out of the box, they're still supported. It'll be direct translation forward. But you might find there'll be some tweaks that you have to make. I think what happens is some of the properties on the list web servers are set automatically for you. But the point is you still have ASP.NET services out of the box. So that's great. WCF, as I mentioned, in the Hive, no virtual path provider, and of course, RESTful. Now, I've got EDM. What EDM means is I'm basically creating an entity data model, okay? And then I'm coding against that model. And the model is a model of my list. Just like you would create an entity data model of some sort of SQL Server data source or a table or whatnot, the ADO.NET services, data services, treat your list as a model. So again, you can code against it. And there is an integration with Excel, so that's cool. It's super cool. And let's go back to my list because I have to prove that this actually worked. Yeah, pan iron vertical. Woo! Give it up. All right. Was that a question back there or are you just waving to me? The client object model will work with external lists. Woo-hoo. Now, there is a little subtext. Tiny, tiny subtext, very small. It only reads. I'm still trying to figure out how it writes. Yeah. I mean, some of this, we're in process, right? You know, I just got the beta, you know, a couple months ago, so I'm playing around with some of this code. And you guys, if you haven't got it already, I'm sure you'll be downloading it here pretty soon. So, you know, it's funny. I go to these user group meetings, and I'll sit down with developers, and they're like, how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you do that? I'm like, yeah, I'm just starting like you. You know, so in some cases, we're all here together. It's just one big party. One big SharePoint code party. Woo, woo. All right, so I should have a record added. That was my check. I had a message box. Didn't check anything, but I told you it added. Okay? And let's check out. Clear, that works. Exit, that works. Super exciting there. Okay, so services and OM. Workflow. I'm not going to go through every single one of these bullets, but you could imagine that there's lots of improvements with workflow in SharePoint 2010. So in 2007, you had the capability to build sequential and state workflow. You can continue to do that. In fact, I believe that in Visual Studio 2010, the only two templates that you can build for 2007 are indeed the state and sequential workflow. Okay? The rest of the templates in Visual Studio are geared directly towards 2010, SharePoint 2010. Okay? So just remember that as you're kind of coding up and planning out your development environment. The interesting thing, I might have talked about this a little bit, but when we think about SharePoint Designer and Visual Studio, there's an interesting thing that you could do. So if you think about power users or information workers building out workflow, they could go into Visio, okay, and they can create and design a SharePoint workflow. All right, so I can open up Visio, drag and drop some activities, create my workflow, and save it, and then import it or export it into SharePoint. All right, so I'm an information worker, I'm a project manager, I'm defining a process. Okay, I hand that off to the SharePoint developer or SharePoint designer person. They can pull it in, have some rules-based workflow that they can build in SharePoint Designer. Awesome. They can build that as a WSP and then hand that off to, of course, the pro dev who's like C-sharp man or VB man, and they can take that and add some lower-level workflow. So it's a nice, again, this hand-in-glove relationship that you can start out with an information worker who knows and is comfortable in Visio all the way down to a pro developer who's comfortable in Visual Studio. Okay? So good stuff there. REST APIs. This is just basically... The wizard. So if you're going to use the REST APIs, you have to add the SharePoint list as a data source. And so it goes through this, you know, the general wizard when you're adding data into a project. Go through, add SharePoint, and then you can actually code against it. So it's a fairly standard process. There's just some things going on behind the scenes that automatically create that entity data model for you so you can code against it. List events. Again, lots of events, so basically what that means is if you have a list and you want some sort of trigger behavior to happen or occur when somebody does something to a list, that can be arranged through the list events and list event receivers. There's just a whole host of stuff here. In fact, I think my next one is creating a list event receiver. All right. Who's excited? All right. So we're going to get away from the hanging pants. We're going to talk about Homeland Security for a bit, huh? Where? Where's Homeland Security? Don't worry. I think. So what we're going to do is we're going to create an empty SharePoint project. I actually like, and the reason I like to start out with an empty SharePoint project, especially when you create a web part project or a visual web part project, and definitely in the beta, because you know how sometimes you have to rename all your titles and it's kind of a pain to do a replace all? If you create an empty SharePoint project and add the visual web part, the web part, you have no problems with naming your files. Does that make sense? Yeah, so just a little tidbit. We'll say my first list receiver. Receiver. Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll create that. And then what we want to do is on that project, I want to create a list event of some sort. And we'll deploy this as a farm level solution again. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an event that will write to a log, okay? You know, because we liked Homeland Security, likes to log stuff because they have analytics on the other side going, what are they doing? All those people at SharePoint Connections, what are they doing? Where are they going? We must follow them. You guys aren't like, the Homeland Security isn't resonating with you guys. I'm not feeling the vibe. I understand, but Homeland Security are in Europe too. All right, so here we go. Event receiver. We'll just say event. In fact, we'll say fun event. Okay? And then I click add. And what that does, it actually attaches itself to the server. And it says, hey, you know, now that I've gone out to the server, I'm actually going to expose a wizard to you. And it's going to ask me to attach to a specific list. Okay? Now, I can add a specific type of event receiver. So I've got list events, list item events, web events, list workflow events. I'll stick with list item events. I can say, you know, I can associate it with a particular list. And the nice thing is here, let me see here, is I can go into my calendar and associate something with the calendar. And the nice thing is here, I've got all these different events that I can handle against that particular list. Okay? And again, once you actually create this, you know, your kind of your SharePoint development prowess will actually kick in because you use the server-side object model, do lots of different things, whatever you want. So we'll say when an item is being added to the calendar, we're going to go ahead and do something. Okay? Now what we'll do is we'll create a log file here on, I think I have one let's actually create a new one. Because you guys just aren't into Homeland Security. All right, we'll say log. I want to do one thing here. Save as log.txt. Save. Yes, I do. I'm going to replace that. Okay, so there we go. So there's nothing in there now. So what we'll do is we'll go back to our thing. And you can see here that we've got basically an event receiver. So my first list receiver.funEvent. Okay, we'll add in a method. So we'll say log an event. And what we'll do is we'll pass in the properties of the event, and I want to pass in a string, event. Okay? Simply put. And, of course, this isn't going to exist right now, so we'll have to generate the method. So we'll go ahead and generate the method stub, and that'll lay the method out for us. And then what we'll do is we will add some code in here. Let's go here. Okay. Go ahead. And I think I have to fix a couple things here. Let's get rid of that. And that. So, and that. Probably could have done something a little easier, but we won't say what, right? All right, so my event name, I'm going to pass that. Now I have to resolve, because I don't have these usings actually in my file, so we'll just resolve these guys. And just to give you an idea of what's going on, we're going to take the properties. Okay, we're going to pass those properties into this event. Okay, and this is when an item is added. It's going to trigger this particular event. And then we're just going to log some information based on the properties that are being sent in there. Okay, and you can see that I've set the permission on that particular file system, so it should be okay. And let's go ahead and build and deploy. All right. Any questions while I'm doing this? You know, that's a great question. The question was, can I start forgetting about manifest XML? You absolutely can. How cool is that? It's awesome, isn't it? And you know what I'll do is, let's go to this View Solution Explorer. Again, I'm going to drill into a lot of this afternoon. But while you guys are here, in case you aren't going to, you know, see or come back and later on, you can see that if you go in the feature here, it's going to actually expose this feature designer. And so this kind of generates all that manifest for you. If you really, really, really want to edit it, you can. But and the whole goal of Visual Studio, these tools, was to abstract you having to edit the XML, right? So no more hand coding XML. But you could still go in this if you wanted to and edit it, right? I can edit it if I want to. But, you know, a lot of stuff is done by default for you, so you shouldn't have to do that. Okay? So really nice functionality. So I think this deployed. Let's go ahead and check it out. We'll go over here into Site Assets. I'll go into my calendar. It'll take a little bit here to load. While it's loading, any other questions? Shout out questions. I was in Lisbon last week, and I noticed the audiences here in Europe are much more reserved. They don't ask as many questions as in the States. They actually throw stuff at you. It's crazy. Yep. No, so basically what would have to happen, you'd have to take that WSP and redeploy it, and I think it should configure itself. I'd have to test it out, but theoretically, if you were to import that WSP and then redeploy it, it should be reconfiguring to that particular farm. But I'd have to test it, and I'll post that on my blog. How's that? Yeah, I think it would work, but I'd have to verify. So, events, new event. Go ahead and please wait the content loads. Fun event in Europe. And we'll just say this is going to be a 24-hour party. All right? How fun is that? Save it. And then what that should do, I should kick off the event. And hopefully if we go back to our log, there we go. So, so in that example, I created a list event receiver. Created some code that interacted with my file system, wrote a log, every time I did something and added, added an item to an event. Now, you could get really crazy with these list event receivers. They're very powerful, though. You could, stop people from doing certain things if they're trying, they don't have permissions, and so on and so forth. So you could do validation on items for a list. So lots of things that you could actually do with the list event receiver. Okay. You certainly can. So writing to the file system probably wouldn't, but list event receivers, you could definitely add list event receivers to a particular internet site, okay? Now, you're going to have, you're going to have some restrictions when you're obviously working in the internet, right? It's a different domain. You probably wouldn't want to make any file system calls from a particular event being triggered from a list, I don't think. I couldn't think of a scenario where you'd want to do that unless it's a server-side logging thing that you might be doing, but you could, the general answer is you could definitely do attached list events to an internet-facing site. But I'm sure there's some parameters there that you'd want to think about. So user experience, so basically I talked a bit about this. The whole idea was to take the ribbon from the client and kind of replicate that for the server. And so that's essentially what we did here. These are just different parts of that ribbon. Actually, in SharePoint Designer, you can actually create InfoPath forms very easily and deploy them into SharePoint, so you can customize forms very easily. Again, I talked a bit about the XSLT support, but basically you could think of XSLT as being everywhere in SharePoint, okay? When you have some sort of CAML or XML construct, you have the ability to take that and transform that into a nice formatted object or page of some sort, okay? Easier editing in SharePoint Designer. And I think you've seen some of that, so we don't have to spend too much time there. Silverlight and SharePoint. So, how many people have actually coded Silverlight for SharePoint? Awesome. Quite a few. In Portugal last week, there was 350 people in the room. One person put their hand up. It's pretty bizarre. Because I'm seeing more and more momentum, at least stateside, in more and more people doing Silverlight stuff for SharePoint. So it's exciting to see that. But basically, in the context of SharePoint 2010, basically, there's a couple of out-of-the-box Silverlight parts that you have available to you. So in the blogs and wikis, you have this media player web part available to you. So basically what that means is you can build more interactive and media-rich blog entries. You have things that a Silverlight media web part. So basically what that means is I could just build a Silverlight web part and deploy it into SharePoint if I wanted to. And, of course, Silverlight has the capability of actually reaching into the SharePoint object model. And as we mentioned, you could use the client object model to call into SharePoint, and lots of good stuff there. Now, the example I have, I think, here, what I've got is I've got something pre-built for you. Let's go into, go in here, file, open. I think it's demo 5, yep. Now, interesting, I call this low integration Silverlight application. The reason I call this low integration, because I think there's three levels of integration when you think about Silverlight and SharePoint. The first one is basically no integration at all. So it might even be an iframe reference to something that's actually being streamed in from the internet. The second one is low integration, that's this one here, where you could potentially take it and you use either the out-of-the-box web part to host that Silverlight application, or you actually deploy a web part with the Silverlight application and deploy them together. But there is really no interaction with the SharePoint object model. The third type of Silverlight application you'd have would be, hey, I want to actually get into the object model. I want to affect list data. I want to do some stuff over here. I want to completely redesign the navigation system within SharePoint using Silverlight, which you can do. So it depends on what you want to do with Silverlight. It's very, very powerful when you think about it in tandem with the SharePoint object model. So what we've got here, let's go ahead and just take a look at the main page. Again, I don't want to offend you with my terrible UI design skills, but I created a little application that what it's going to do, it's going to provide some data that I'm pulling in from an XML file, employee scorecard. It's going to get a name from the XML file, which just represents all the employees. And if we look at that, you can see that. We can open it up here. It's fairly simple. It's got a name record, an employee ID record, F08, F09, F10, with some review scores. And then basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to load that in. I'm going to calculate an average score. And that's going to determine whether the person gets a promotion or whether they go on the fast track. See, this is how we do reviews at Microsoft. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. We'll edit that out of the video. Might lose my job for that one. So if we look at the code behind, you can see that, let me see what I've got. I've got actually, I've created, basically a class object here. If you can't see that, we'll just spin it up. Class objects, employee name, ID. So I've got my XML file. I've got my class object. I'm obviously going to spin through and populate a list collection if you know where I'm going with this. And if you look at that, we go down. I have a list employee, so my employee list is my list collection object. And again, this is me coding up on the plane coming over. And so this is unoptimized. I have to throw that out there because someone's going to give me heck for not having optimized try catches, things like that. So I'm just going to go through and populate an in-memory object. And then what I'm going to do is, more importantly, actually bind that to the data grid or the list box. And then when I select something, it's going to go through and display some information, okay? And jumping down here, let's just go down here. So this is just, depending on who I select, it's going to throw out some scores and it's going to create some calculations for me. It's as simple as that, right? So if I go ahead and click F5, now this is outside the context of SharePoint. It's just a Silverlight application we're running, you know, just in a test environment that it builds for us, the Silverlight application project template builds for us. So I click load, nice and performant, John Doe, employee ID, calculate, ooh, low reward. John's not going to be happy. Mrs. Doe is going to be even less happy. All right, Lamont Smith, calculate, same thing. So basically, just depending on the data, it will calculate some sort of, I think Steve then had a high one. Let's, there we go, high reward. Woo-woo! Steve's going to be happy. All right, so at this point, if we go over here and take a look at, there's a number of ways you can actually integrate Zap files with SharePoint. Okay? I go over here, I can open this up in my browser. And basically what I can do is take this. All I need to do is get the Zap file. And so, I'm going to throw a caution out there, because I'm going to show you something with the big subtext. You can take a Zap file, and you can put it in a Zap's document library, but if someone has permissions to that library and deletes it, you're pooched, right? There goes that nice Silverlight application. So if you've created a link to it somewhere inside of your SharePoint site, it's gone. There is a better way to do it, so let's do this first, and I'll talk about the better way afterwards. Okay? So basically all I need to do is grab the link to that, and I'm going to go into my SharePoint site. I'll go into this test page I had before, and this is the one where we actually just had that very simple web part on it. And then I'm going to go into Site Actions. I'm going to go into Edit the Page. Actually, sorry, I'm going to go into Zaps first. Zaps is where I keep all my Silverlight applications. And here I would add a new document. And it's already there, but I would just paste in that URL or that Explorer link. Here's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to copy the shortcut now that I have it in there. And then I'll go back to my my test site, my test web page. I'll go Site Actions. Edit page, add a web part, media content, Silverlight. Here's the Silverlight out of the box web part. You can pass it in a URL. Click OK. And then click Add. And that will then put this in there and you'll have the same functionality. Okay? So that's one way of getting Silverlight into your SharePoint site. I'm going to show you a quick thing. I'm going to show you a quick glimpse. I'm actually going to drill into this a little later on today, but I want to show you this now while I've got it up. Because I think if I were actually going to do a Silverlight integration, let me see here, just let me find it. I would actually do it a little differently than that. And the reason I want to do that is for two reasons. A, I don't want to have to go manually add that Zap file every time I want to use it and create a pointer to it, right? It's kind of a pain. It means that I have to go do something. Instead, what I would do is I have my Silverlight application. I'd actually add a web part project. The web part project will reference my Silverlight application. As you can see up here, if we look at the actual screen over here, here's my web part project, and you've seen how I've created those before, fairly simple. You can see that I've got my Silverlight web part project, but then I've got this thing called an SL app file. Okay? And again, I'll talk about this more later on, but this is a module where I've created a link, an existing link, to my Silverlight application. And I've also created a project dependency on it. So if I build my web part application, it's going to subsequently build my Silverlight application, and it's going to deploy it using a module into the place where I want it to go. Okay? And so if I go and look at where I've put this guy, you'll see that if we go over here, it puts it into a special folder called Zap Bin. Okay? And what this means is I can make all these changes to the Silverlight application, all right? And I can just keep deploying my web part, and I don't have to go and do that document library thing, you know, edit and whatnot. I can just actually deploy the web part once, edit the page once, and I just keep refreshing the page every time I deploy, and you'll see the changes. Okay? It's just a really kind of quick way to deploy Silverlight applications into SharePoint without having to worry about the fuss and the manual intervention of adding it to a document library. Okay? Any questions on that? Yeah. Yeah, great question. The question was, is it possible to pass parameters? You use the init params to pass parameters across to Silverlight and SharePoint. So you could do it. I've chosen not to do it here. You can see here that basically what I've done in the context of my web part are two things. I've created this div object with some script inside of it that's going to render my Silverlight application, and I've passed it in as a literal control. Okay? Pretty simple stuff, but, you know, just again, one of these workarounds that you, I don't know if it's documented. Maybe we documented it before and we have a book out, but anyways, so good stuff. All right, deployment. We are looking about 5 or 10 minutes here, so flexible deployment, what does it mean? So I think the key here, there's a couple key things here when we think about deployment. First of all, in terms of application lifecycle management, source control. Remember when I created that file new project? I don't even saw that, but if you go back here and I click file new project, you can see that down here, I actually have this add to source control. This is part of the ALM functionality that's built in to the SharePoint project, or VS2010. So the point is, if you are all part of a team and you need to contribute to a particular team foundation server, you can actually do that. And you can actually add it to a source control tree, one that kind of, you know, combines all of your work together and run a script against it again to build it out to a staging server. But really that was kind of difficult before. There was no out-of-the-box functionality that allowed you to do that with SharePoint code. So nice thing that's built into Visual Studio 2010 that you can take advantage of as a developer. SharePoint Online. So if I build these things called sandbox solutions, sandbox solutions are simply put, they're just a WSP that you would build and deploy into this ring-fenced area inside of SharePoint. Okay? You actually deploy it to somewhere called the Solutions Gallery. All right? And the Solutions Gallery has its own kind of activation and deactivation, just like you would do with your Feature Gallery. So think about the Solutions Gallery as just kind of a smaller set of a place where you can actually add code that you can activate and deactivate. Now, the interesting thing about the sandbox solutions, though, is that if you put a sandbox solutions on a web, there's actually metrics that will run against your WSP. So if you're burning up memory, you've got some real kind of weird code going, it's doing taking too much time, you get shut down. Woo, how's that? Done. Bye-bye. And so, you know, there's some of this, you know, some of the stuff is actually built in. And you can configure some of those metrics. So if you wanted to have more time available for a particular, you know, solutions gallery, you can configure that through PowerShell. But lots of good stuff there. So I think the key takeaway from this slide, just to kind of keep things moving here so we can get you out on time, WSP, when you think about SharePoint 2010, think about WSP as the standard deployment method, okay? Which is awesome, all right? WSP, woohoo, shout out. There's lots of stuff that you can do. There's actually an import WSP project template, so I could actually import someone else's WSP and deploy it into my farm. Now, I'll have to your question, I'll have to kind of verify what configurations are changed along the way. Does it automatically associate it with a particular list, for example, and if not, does it break it? I'll need to validate that. SharePoint Online, this is a solution gallery. I just talked a bit about that, but basically you can see here, you just browse to and upload a WSP into the solution gallery. And then you activate it and it becomes an active part of your sandbox area. Okay? ALM, we talked a bit about that. Team Foundation Server. So all goodness there. I think, I don't know what more I can say there. Whoa, this slide just speaks for itself, doesn't it? It's kind of making me dizzy just watching it. So I stole this from a buddy of mine. He's like, this is such a cool slide, you got to show this. And I'm like, okay, I'll show it. But the point is, there's just a balance, right? Sandbox solutions kind of open up some territory for you in terms of not having to deal with the farm level administrator. That's goodness. What are the trade-offs? You can't build applications that would then be reaching outside of a certain kind of ring fence, right? So I couldn't access certain resources within the sandbox solution. So think about this carefully when you're designing your applications. There are trade-offs for sandbox solutions, okay? I'm not going to do a demo. In fact, all I'll do is quickly show you where you actually upload the sandbox solution, because I think that's the most important part. You all know what a WSP looks like. You all know. So if you go over here into solutions, this is where you can find the solutions gallery inside your site settings. As soon as my page loads, there we go. And you can see that in here I've actually uploaded my Twitter feed web part, which is basically a web part I build to Twitter from SharePoint. And you can see that from here I can activate or I can deactivate that. And if I click activate, I'll go ahead and click activate it. It just creates, it spawns this activate wizard that allows me to activate it. You can see it's got a solution ID associated with it. So you can see that when I upload that, these metrics are tracking against that GUID, and they'll shut it down again if there's any problems with this. So, all right, let's jump back here. And I think what I'll do is I'm just going to jump down here and open it up for a couple minutes of questions. The last thing I'll kind of give a shout out to Channel 9. My team has put together a lot of different collateral. It's free collateral. There's a training kit up there. It's 300 level. The assumption on this training kit is that you know SharePoint 2010 as a developer. You can download this. It covers 14 modules. It's free. Take it. Learn whatever. There's videos, hands-on labs, source code, lots of good stuff. And you can just go there to visit. So with that, I'll open it up for a couple questions. Yep. Someone wants to go. Yep. Sorry?
Surveys.
Yep, there's surveys in SharePoint. Are they, how customizable are they? Is that what you asked? So I haven't taken a good look at the surveys, to be honest with you. I think they're similar to the survey that you had in 2007. In terms of customizing, they're just like any other artifact. Like, for example, you could create a Silverlight user interface against that survey and create all sorts of interesting things. So I think they are definitely customizable depending on what you want to do and how you want to do it. Okay? Yeah? Quick question.
When using a sandbox solution,
yep.
Do I still have the application pool
design? Do you have to?
So when I'm testing, that's what sandbox means.
Yep.
Do I use it still?
I can't hear the last part of the
question. Sorry, do my users still feel it when I'm testing?
Oh, do your users still feel it? I think so. I think if I'm understanding your question, I think so, yeah. Yeah. I think so, yeah. Yep. Yes. You can join. You get a special type of icon when you're actually joining the lists, but yes, you can. Yeah, the question is, can you join a list and do a lookup? And you can definitely do that across join lists in SharePoint 2010, and when you do it, you get this special icon that says these things are kind of lookup lists, columns rather. I'll take one more question and then and let you get going for lunch here. Yep. That's a great question. So the question is, can I convert a sandbox solution back to a normal solution? And the answer to the question is yes. However, you can't always do the other way, okay? There will be some solutions that are farm-level solutions that you wouldn't be able to run in a sandbox environment. Right now, there's a visual web part project. I know that Wouter's going to talk this afternoon. He's built one that actually does run in a sandbox solution. But out of the box, the visual web part doesn't run in the sandbox environment because it reaches back and uses a file system control to kind of load in the web part. So that's the sort of stuff when you're thinking about what you want to do with that sandbox solution. Think about, you know, architecting around where you're trying to reach and what you're trying to do. So what I'll do is I'll let you all go for lunch, and I'll hang out here. Whoever wants to come, and I'll answer some questions. But thank you for your time, and enjoy the rest of the week.